So over the last 25 sermons, we have looked at the period of approximately 2300 years. Thus, the book of Genesis is a compact book which consumes more than half of the period that is mentioned in the Old Testament. So what have we learned so far by examining the book of Genesis? We learned how the humankind has started and how it has fallen into corruption. And we examined the reasons why we were wiped away with flood as a punishment, and found out that the history of humankind has started again through Noah. However, unfortunately, humans have forgotten about God and defied against His presence by building the Tower of Babel. And this has led to humans to be separated and segregated with different languages and different cultures. However, the most important thing that we have observed is that the sinful nature of humankind has not perished God's kingdom, but rather it's been composed through His faithful people who have reacted to God's calling. So in other words, we can make an observation that it is not the Satan who has tried to perish this world that God has created, but rather it's the humans who have abused their power of free wills, which have separated themselves from His kingdom. It is our choosing to follow our selfish desires rather than to follow ways to glorify God's kingdom. And that is the truth. And in order to recall His people, God has even sent His Son Jesus Christ, His only Son, Jesus Christ, as a living testimony, so that we may able to react to His calling. So you could say that God's kingdom is being formed through those who have reacted to His calling. So in conclusion, through the original history of Genesis, we have indeed learned a lot from studying an individual's life story, such as Abraham and Joseph's. And through their stories, we're able to see what it takes to truly become a follower of God and what it means to be living a faithful life. In addition, we were able to learn about the human's identity, such as the rationale behind why we were created and why we're supposed to be what we're supposed to be in this world. Above all, we need to use our free wills to cherish the faith that we have in His kingdom and continue to pursue God's words and God's values, because that is the reason why He is calling us today as His servants and as His people. So let us not forget about this as we continue to study the history of the Bible. So regardless of which part of the Bible you're reading or studying, you must first have the big picture before diving deeper into the fine details. So do you remember when the book of Genesis was recorded and what the sole purpose was for recording it? So if we refer back to our old chart here, it shows that the books with green circles around them are books that tells us the history in a chronological order. And the rest are, that do not have the green circles around them are books that were written in the same period. So we can tell that Genesis came first in terms of chronological event, but the book of Leviticus was written or recorded before Genesis. So the point that I'm trying to make here is that the book of Leviticus is the most important book in the Bible. There is a reason why Leviticus was recorded as the very first book of the Bible. It's because it's the heart of the Old Testament, and moreover, you could say that it's the heart of the entire Bible. In Leviticus, many of the essential values of Christianity is recorded, such as the Ten Commandments and covenants that were given by God to Moses, which Moses then passed on to the Israelite people. And they tell us how to live as God's people and tell us in details of the things that we must be mindful of as we live in this world. Therefore, if we do not have the proper understanding of the covenant made in Mount Sinai, then it is almost impossible for us to properly comprehend the overarching principle or the understanding of the Bible. And just to be clear, when I say the covenant, it means the covenant made in Mount Sinai, unless I say it otherwise. So, in order to properly understand the book of Genesis, we need to focus on the covenant itself. And remember, the understanding of the covenant is essential in understanding Leviticus, which will be important in helping us understand the Bible itself. So try to follow this logic to see why Genesis is so important. Because of the history of their ancestors, these Israelites have received salvation. However, because 720 years have gone by since Abraham's passing, they didn't have the firm beliefs or the genuine faith per se. That is why through this covenant, God is telling the Israelites who He is and how He came about calling on their ancestors such as Isaac or Abraham, and what kind of accomplishments He has made through Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And all of this is recorded in the book of Genesis. Thus, because this book of Genesis is outlining the reason and purpose of the covenant that God has made with His people, it is being utilized as a guidance to help us with the direction that aligns with God's object. From the day that God's people were free from Egypt and to the current presence, the covenant is informing us with who God is and why He called us and what it means to live a faithful life. Regardless of where or how our faith has started, it is imperative to know about the God who has created us and how this world is trending, and therefore understanding how to live as His people. And we find these answers to these questions in the book of Genesis. Furthermore, the covenant works as a core of the first five books of the Bible, the Pentateuch. And therefore, the understanding of the first five books of the Bible is vital in gaining an insight to understanding the entire Bible. To give you that big picture, this may be a bit confusing, so let me try to break it down for you guys if you couldn't follow what I've been trying to say here. In terms of drawing the big picture, the book of Leviticus records the contents of the covenant, which can be seen as a pillar or the heart of the entire Bible. And the book of Genesis is about the introduction of the covenant being made with God. And the book of Exodus that we're now going to study is about the history of the process of how the covenant has been recorded during the period between Genesis and what has happened in Mount Sinai. And moving on, the book of Numbers is the application section. It gives us the introduction of how to live up to the values of the covenant and therefore living accordingly as His people. Lastly, the book of Deuteronomy is a recap of Leviticus, but in a different context. The aim of this book is focused on the new generation that is about to enter into the chosen land of Canaan to live a life that replicates the life in God's kingdom. So if we have these summary, per se, of the five books, then we're going to have a better understanding the entire Bible. So think of this covenant as this way. The covenant that has been made with Abraham has become codified through Moses. Thus, the covenant is to be a symbol of God's words being codified. In other words, it is a proof of God's words becoming official for those faithful descendants to follow after Abraham and Moses. To summarize, the covenant is really showing us the standard and the values that God has stored for us. And it tells us how the ancestors have perceived those things in their lives. And some of the standards and values have now been codified or became the ultimate laws for us to follow. A prime example of that is the Ten Commandments. And interestingly enough, the standard implemented in the rest of the Old Testament to decide the rise and fall of the humans have came down to whether the humans have lived accordingly to the covenant or not. Unfortunately, many of the humans in the history have went about their own ways, meaning they went against the covenant. However, God continues to make new covenants with those few left who continue to live a faithful life. And God even sends His only Son, Jesus Christ, who symbolizes God's words in human flesh. And this also can be seen as a method God uses to maintain the covenant and promises made with the humans, made with us. So what I mean by like making covenant, making promises with those who are left, is those who are staying faithful to His words, even though there have been corruption and fall and how the humans have fallen in the past. That doesn't matter. And God still wants to make a new covenant with those who are left in this world, who are trying to stay faithful to His words. And above all, we must remember that the contents of the covenants are really, really important in understanding the overall flow of the history and the contents of the Bible. Now then, let's move on to the book of Exodus. The assumption is that Moses is the author of this book, and it is alleged that he wrote this right before his death, but after recording Deuteronomy in the flatland of Moab, which is in between the period of 1446 BC and 1406 BC. Now, in terms of understanding the purpose of this book, it is helpful for us to read it in the perspective of God's people who have made the covenant in Mount Sinai. So this book is basically making these people aware of how they have been free from Egypt and the purpose of God leading them to Mount Sinai for the sake of their salvation. Thus, it is really a recording of an important historical event where God is trying to make this covenant with His people that has really started with the promise that God has made with Abraham. And you might have guessed it by now. The most important chapter in Exodus is therefore chapter 19, because it is talking about the covenant in Mount Sinai. In this chapter, what God is really doing is He's inviting His people, more precisely, He's inviting the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Joseph, who God have also made covenants with, to make covenants once more with them. He's inviting the descendants of these people to make new covenants with them. And that is very significant for us. And this invitation is so fascinating because you can see how patient our God is, how patient He is. These people have defied God's calling and have ignored the presence of God for a very long time. However, as they have moved away from the rich and convenient life in Egypt to a life that is full of oppression and persecution, they now wanted to stop their ignorant behaviors towards God. And when they did so, God didn't say, "Man, I don't care about you guys anymore, so go away." Rather, He listened to His people's mourning and fulfilled the history that He has prepared for them. And God does this by inviting these people with the same promise and covenant that He has made previously with Abraham, and tells them exactly how to distinguish their lives from non-Christians by drawing a clear boundary. So do you understand the reason why God is calling us in this presence, even though we're sinners. He's just a patient guy. He's a willing guy. He has prepared so much for us, and he's just waiting for us to accept his invitation so that we may able to react to his calling, so that he may able to reveal to us his promise that he has prepared for us. And now we start to understand the significance of the covenant made in Mount Sinai. We know how important this is now, what this means, and the impact that it has on our faith. But we tend to lose our interest in this part of the book. I mean, let's be honest here. When we read the book of Exodus in the past or before, we're always fascinated by the miracles that God has performed. And indeed, the miracles and the Passover part of the book are important. However, it is more important to recognize the covenant that God has made with Abraham, with his his descendants. Moreover, the Ten Commandments in chapter 20, which signifies the standard that God's people should follow, is more important than the stories of miracles, how he split the seas. And we know that it is more important because without having a proper understanding of God's intention or aim that is revealed through the event in Mount Sinai, we're in danger of living a Christian life that appears to be a wasteful one at the end. As we look at the overall flow of the history, it seems like people who have come before God under free will to receive salvation doesn't seem to have the interest to live as God's people anymore. I mean, God wanted to start a new chapter for his people. Through Mount Sinai, he wanted to restore his nation and wanted to start a new beginning. And therefore, this event was significant for God as well. Unfortunately, his people don't seem to have any interest in living such godly life. But wouldn't you agree that this is exactly who we are after Jesus has come on this earth to give us salvation? Think about this. The Israelites who ran away from Egypt to be free from slavery has come together in church to make covenant with God. And God gave them the law and his rules so that they may live accordingly as God's people. However, it seems like the church today has become wary or indifferent towards teaching about the Word of God. So my hope for all of us here today is that as we look at the situation and events mentioned in the book of Exodus, that we truly understand what makes God pleased and what he expects from us. Rather than emphasizing too much on the surface of the miracles that God has performed, I hope it becomes an opportunity for us to dig deeper, to truly see what God's intention and his end goals are by looking at those historical events. That is why this covenant is so important, because it reveals to us where to draw the boundaries in order to live a life that is fulfilled with God's values and standards. And therefore, we need to arm ourselves with understanding of the covenant so that no matter where we go, whether it's to the land of Canaan or Babylon, or to school or to work, or even within the relationships with friends and families, that we will be able to live like true Christians and in the image of God's people. And if we look at the PowerPoint here, we can label the book of Exodus into 7 broad categories. So first 4 chapters is about God's effort to raise his people. And from chapters 5 to 12 is about God's 10 plagues. And chapter 13 through 18 is the escape from Egypt at Passover. And chapter 19 is the covenant made in Mount Sinai. And chapter 20 is the 10 commandments. And chapters 21 through 24 are about the rules and the statutes, the codification of the covenants. And chapters 25 to 40 is about the construction of the church, the building of the church. So here's a fact for you guys. Since the 12 sons of Jacob have settled down in Egypt, the population of Israelites have grown from 70 family members to almost 2 million members within the period of 300 to 350 years. To give you a better picture, so when the army of Egypt has fought in battles, the number of Israel soldiers were close to 600,000, which is approximately similar to the size of the Korean army. That's how big the Israel population has grown in Egypt. So after the death of Joseph, there is a time where the northerners of Hittite rules Egypt. Sorry, it's the northerners of Hittite that rules Egypt. And if we look at the world history, the 18th dynasty of Egypt once again rules over Egypt after the Higashi dynasty. So it took 220 years for the 18th dynasty in 1584 BC to take place after the death of Joseph in 1806 BC. So we can see it from chapter 1 verse 8. The king that came to power that didn't know about Joseph was the third king of the 18th dynasty of Egypt, who was called the king Thutmose the first. And he reigned from 1539 to 1513 BC. And he is the famous king who enslaved the Hebrews with harsh labor and ordered his men to throw all the firstborn Hebrews into the river. We all know this. So with this new king in charge, he was on the verge of repeating the incident of Tower of Babel from happening again. He was threatening the descendants of Abraham from being dispersing again. Think about this in this perspective of the new Egyptian king. The number of Hebrean soldiers were enormous. They had over 600,000 men who refused to adapt to the Egyptian customs. And from the time of Abraham, the Israelites have differentiated themselves from others by practicing circumcisions and not marrying with other foreigners. They try to live faithful to God, to God's words and His promises. And it is likely that the stubbornness of the Israelite people to preserve their tradition and to uphold the promise made with God would portray to the Egyptians as a closed-minded people. And of course, the influence and the impact of the Egyptian customs and traditions would have been significant as well. Similarly, the customs and practices that we have in this world, which provide earthly pleasures, also have detrimental and harsh impact on our youth. So going back to our point here, the closed-minded and determined will by the Hebrews would have been a great threat against the Egyptians. They were afraid of the 600,000 soldiers who would grow every year in terms of the numbers and possibly overwhelming the Egyptian army. And it would be fair to assume that these Israelites could have easily sided with the Egyptian enemies to overthrow the 18th dynasty of Egypt and possibly seek their independence. That is the reason why the Egyptian government has used their political powers to suppress the Israelites. And we know that they have appointed supervisors to make the Israelites work on hard and demanding laborious works to build their fortresses, to build their towers. These fortresses have now been crumbled into the ground, but it is left as an evidence that indeed the Israelites were abused in terms of trying to erect these fortresses. And exactly how harsh were they towards the Israelites, you might ask? They made them work on the lowest laborious work, such as assisting the overall construction by making them transfer the bricks and big rocks from a river far away. And in order to make these bricks, they needed various materials to make it into a stable brick. However, without giving the necessary resources, the supervisors were busy to condemn and punish the Israelites for not fulfilling their given duties. The Israelites were living in these kind of conditions. So despite the harsh treatment and miserable life standards, the Israelites continued to expand their population. Since this was difficult to accept for the Egyptian government, they have ordered the midwives who helped women with giving birth to kill the child if it was a boy. Furthermore, from chapter 1, verse 22 of Exodus, we can see that since the midwives weren't really following the orders that were given to them, the Pharaoh ordered his soldiers to throw every boy that is born into the Nile River. Then you may ask, why didn't the Israelites just leave Egypt in the first place? I mean, when they had the chance, before this cruel king came to reign in Egypt, why couldn't they leave Egypt? Why couldn't they leave after the death of Joseph? I mean, you have to wonder why they stayed in Egypt after the death of Joseph, right? Why didn't they return to the land of Canaan right away? Obviously, they weren't willing to consolidate their culture with the Egyptian culture, and they knew that their ancestors, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph, have all asked their bones to be buried where their ancestors have been buried. So why didn't they leave when they saw some signs of threats being made against them? It's a very fair question to ask. And the answer to that question is that it is very likely that, again, their selfish desires have led them to this mess, has stopped them from leaving Egypt after the death of Joseph. We have evidence that during the duration of Joseph's death and the beginning of the 18th dynasty of Egypt, so that's about 220 years, these Israelites enjoyed the abundant life. They had enough food in Egypt, so the Israelites refused to live up to the promise of God, which was to go to the land of Canaan. And all along, they were aware of the God's will. So even though they were aware of the God's will and the promises that were made to their ancestors, they're just too occupied with their desires, with the abundant food in Egypt. So the land of Egypt was notorious for never running out of food, never running out of stock. So would the Israelites really wanted to leave such place? They have more than 600,000 soldiers with 2 million family members. So it is fair to say that they were very concerned with finding a place where they could find that much land in the first place, and also enough food for everyone. In one sense, the Israelites are no different from other humans. Humans have the tendency to look for convenient places rather than places with harsh conditions. That is why we tend to compromise to the things that are most convenient, rather than trying to achieve the things that we really need to achieve through hard work and labor. We're often blinded by the physical desires that are in front of us, rather than the overarching objective that we must accomplish in this world. So we can make a further assumption here. If it weren't for the cruel oppression by the people of Egypt, the Israelites would have never decided on their free will to leave Egypt for the settlement of the promised land. So, and we might be silly and ask whether God has planned such harsh and cruel treatment against these Israelites so that he can finally drive them out of Egypt to lead his people to the land of promise. If you truly know God's character and who he is, then you very well know that that is not true. People have the tendency to drive out those weaker ones if they do not follow their orders or try to do things differently from them. We just can't stand and watch the weaker ones be better than us. Isn't that true? Wouldn't you guys agree? That is just a human nature. That is the reason why the Israelites have faced such a cruel and strong oppression from the Egyptians. And it is the free will of the Israelites to chase after what is more convenient and less onerous for them by deciding to stay in Egypt after the death of Joseph. And it was only so natural for the Egyptians to strongly oppress against the Israelites, to stay on top of their game in their own land. These Israelites were in land that belonged to Egypt, and they tried to distinguish themselves from the Egyptian customs and traditions. And it is very fair back then to oppress them, to do whatever they can to maintain the Egyptian culture. It's just politics. And that is a very innate nature of the humans. At this point, it is worthwhile to see how the Israelites have ended up in Egypt in the first place. Remember that because of what the brothers of Joseph had done to him, and the famine that has taken place outside of Egypt, has led them to Egypt as some kind of temporary shelter. And it is very possible that God has been waiting for his people to return back to the promised land as soon as possible. In Genesis chapter 15 and 16, God does show Abraham that his descendants will face a great and dark challenge for 400 years, and that four generations later, they will return back to the promised land. We must not misunderstand that God has planned this, but rather, he is just telling Abraham what is about to happen as a hindsight, because he is a God that knows everything that is to come. But he never intended this to happen. Remember, he's a patient God who is willing to wait for his people. And he's just a God who knows everything that is about to happen. Nevertheless, God has led Abraham to the land of Canaan and gave him a life where Abraham didn't have to leave. Then it only makes sense that they should have returned to this land on their own free will after seeking a temporary shelter in Egypt. But because of their selfish and convenient desires to live and stay in Egypt, they are basically forced, rather than voluntarily, to leave Egypt when the harsh oppression has struck upon them. In conclusion, the terrible things that had happened to the Israelites were due to their own cause. They have caused their own misfortune. They should have voluntarily went before God and to the land that God has promised them. But they have obviously failed to do so, and which has ultimately led them to be persecuted and to be mistreated by the Egyptians. So what is the lesson to take away from this story? At times, the society may look great in terms of providing enough pleasure for our physical desires. However, a society that is not driven by God's promise will soon collapse by the law of the jungle, meaning the strong will always try to overwhelm the weak, will try to overtake the weak. Because of the selfish desires by humans, we will fight for ourselves and try to destroy one another. This means that the weak ones, such as elders, children, and women, will always be the prey of the strong men. So remember, rather than trying to see what is in front of us, rather than going for things that are convenient and seem enticing for us in this world, we must always look beyond that and think about what God is trying to accomplish in this world, and what God's promise is, and how he intends to fulfill his promises. So again, does this make sense now? God didn't control the Egyptian kings or pharaohs to make the Israelites leave Egypt. It was just a very natural thing that had taken place. It is the reality of this world, where societies ran by humans will always be corrupt. The weak will always be bullied by the strong, just like how the Egyptians were being brutal against the weak Israelites. And it is because of the realization by the weak ones that they cannot overcome this hardship on their own after being put into that difficult circumstance. They have now finally been forced to turn around and to come back to God. Remember this, those who have accepted Jesus Christ as their Savior will always have a place where God has promised them to lead. If this is so, ask yourself, are we finding excuses to not go where we are promised to go because of mere convenience? Or because of our laziness? Or because of our selfish desires? Just like what is stated in Luke, are we telling God that we cannot react to His calling because we need to buy land and buy ox, get married, and fertilize the land? Are we making too many excuses in our lives? This is very clear. God is telling us at this very moment and asking us to join on His journey to live a faithful life, to live as a faithful servant of His kingdom, for His kingdom. But just ask yourself if we're living up to that hype, to God's calling or to God's expectation. This is precisely what is going on with the Israelites at this time. They were just making excuses to fulfill their own desires and riches. And just look where they have ended up. Cruel treatment by the Egyptians. That's where they have ended. That has become the reality for them. So let this be a great lesson for all of us today. If we live a life that is similar to the Israelites during that time, then we will also face difficult consequences. So, to conclude, at this very moment, let us get out from our comfort zones. Even though that door might be so far away, and that path to that door of Kingdom of Heaven is steep and narrow, we must go to the land that has been promised by God. We must continue to pursue that road, even though we might feel very uncomfortable doing so. And we must go to the place that God expects and desires us to go. Remember, this world is just a temporary shelter, just like how the Egypt should have been a temporary shelter for the Israelites. It wasn't a land for them to settle in. Their land was the promised land. The land that they were supposed to settle in was the promised land that God has promised them. It wasn't Egypt. And even though we might be so used to the customs of this world, we must seek courage from God to leave such life behind and pursue our given mission by staying faithful to His words and His promise. And we will continue the book of Exodus next week.